You're listening to Face Off, Episode 6, recorded February 27th, 2009. Welcome to Face Off, your face-to-face web technology podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jade Robbins.
And I'm Mark Sanborn.
And in this podcast, we talk about various aspects of web technology, such as web development, social media, and web entrepreneurship, and a whole host of other subjects. So, as always, you can view our show notes at faceoffshow.com or follow us via Twitter at twitter.com/faceoffshow. All right, Mark, let's get into some news and follow-ups. First thing we have to talk about is Hulu pulling their content from a couple of various sources on the internet. So why don't you give us a little background on that?
All right. As you know, I'm a big fan of Hulu. It's basically TV on the internet. It's probably one of the first apps that's really backed. I mean, it's backed by one of the majors.
NBC, I think, was NBC, the first one.
I think there's a couple of them on there.
Yeah, I think NBC kind of started Hulu, though, if I remember, because they pulled their content from iTunes because of iTunes prices, and so NBC people, I think, put venture capital into Hulu.
Most people already know about Hulu, but if you don't, you should check it out. I mean, it's a pretty good service. You can watch TV shows, you know, basically anything that's on TV that's on NBC networks or, you know, any, I don't know, there's House. Yeah.
I mean, they even have some movies and stuff on there now, so it's really growing in its content selection, yeah.
There's Family Guy. I know there's on there Simpsons, quite a few. The news is that Hulu used to Hulu used to play on TV.com and Boxy and various other sources, and just recently they pulled off of all these services, so you can no longer view Hulu on Boxy or the Xbox Media Player Center or Media Center or TV.com.
Okay, do we know? I mean, why do they do this?
I have a feeling that they're doing it because they're going to release maybe their own thing, or I don't know.
Yeah, they didn't really come out and say to everybody, hey, this is why we did this, but I don't know. It's curious to wonder. See, currently they have ads, you know, even on Boxy and TV.com, you still got their in-video ads. They had some that they would do at the end of the show, during the show, at the beginning of the show. And those ads were there. So, I mean, they have to be kind of maybe doing something for some advertisement on their website or something. Or maybe they're having trouble convincing people that, you know, convincing advertisers that eyeballs were actually going to their website because they were on these other services. I don't know.
Yeah, and I mean, internet ads, you have a lot more information, and you can actually put different ads on based on what that person is, what profile they are.
In video ads, like... actually embedded in the video. I mean, now we've seen YouTube kind of puts up little overlays on their stuff, but that's also kind of based on the content. I've noticed there's been some ads I've seen where based on kind of what the content around the page is, it does that. But this isn't like that. This is an ad that, you know, the video takes a commercial break and rolls an ad.
Right.
And you can't really tailor that very well, right?
And if you knew somehow, I mean, on the internet, you know what things a person's already been clicking on, especially if they're already logged into Hulu, they're maybe a user. You might know their age. You might know different things about them. So you could display an ad that's particular to that person, whereas on TV, you have to play a general ad that you fit everybody.
So what do you think is going to happen out of this? I think we're going to see a backlash. I think we kind of hit on this on our last podcast. So I don't want to drone on about it too much. But, you know, sort of social communities on the internet today don't like being told what to do, and when companies kind of start pushing their weight on, I mean, you've seen this with Dig a lot. When Dig kind of even tweaks their algorithm a little bit, the entire community calls out in outcry, and it almost starts a battle inside. So
one of the things I've heard is that cable companies are going to make, like, they're going to have a bunch of little Hulus, and the cable companies are going to run it. The cable companies, as ISPs, you know, service providers for the internet, they know which customers they have, and they can actually shape the internet towards different users. So, like, they could say, okay, this person paid for this service, so let's let that person watch TV, versus this guy didn't pay, so let's not watch. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it just seems silly, though, to have sort of this double redundant infrastructure where if Hulu's doing it, and Hulu's doing a good job. Like, I know I watched a lot of Hulu back when it was in Boxy. I mean, it was good quality stuff. I mean, I didn't notice that it had bad quality. And I mean, it just seems almost silly for a cable company. Like, I noticed this with, I can't even think of it right now, but sometimes, like, cable companies and telco, you know, telecom companies tend to do things that everyone else is doing and not do them as well. But they can do it probably cheaper because they're in control of the infrastructure directly. Like with cable, they say which digital TV boxes can be used on their service. So they can sort of tailor services to that. But I don't know. I just don't like the idea of more than one company doing things, especially when there becomes a conflict of interest. Like, our cable company is going to start, you know, degrading Hulu quality because they're offering a similar service. There's been some talk about this kind of with Netflix streaming because, you know, what is it? You know, cable companies offer on-demand movies, and that's what Netflix streaming is doing. And some people are wondering if companies are degrading their quality. I don't know. It seems like a situation that I'm not really comfortable with.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what they're going to do with it. You would think that an ad is an ad. The advertisers are obviously wanting to get more and more people to watch the ad.
Yeah.
They're going to lose people by taking Hulu off Boxy and TV.com. They're losing some viewers.
Yeah. I mean, I know. When it first opened, I went to Hulu.com and watched stuff, but I did not touch it again until I got Boxy and was playing around with it. Because Boxy added a lot of cool stuff, like you can add your friends to it and recommend videos to your friends based, you know, when you're watching on all these different services. It's just a good aggregator, and so I think there's going to be a backlash, and I think we're going to see Hulu either changing this decision or giving us a good, clear reason why they did it. You know, okay. Well, I mean, speaking of Netflix, we just kind of mentioned Netflix a little bit there in their streaming service. I guess what this news item is saying is that Netflix is planning to have a streaming-only plan by the year 2010.
Now, I use Netflix to stream movies, and I like it. You've used it?
Yeah,
too?
I love it.
On your Xbox?
Yeah, I have it on my Xbox 360. I have it. Boxy supports Netflix streaming as well.
Does Boxy?
Yeah.
So does that work in Linux, do you know?
Because
I know Netflix, I've had problems because it used to be IE only. You're saying maybe Silverlight?
They just switched. Now you can watch Boxy on the Mac because instead of using a proprietary Windows Media DRM thing, they use Microsoft Silverlight now, which there's at least a version out there for Mac. I'm not sure about Linux. I'm assuming if you can't watch it in Linux, you probably can't watch it in Boxy on Linux. But
maybe Boxy made a deal with them and they have the player embedded in the thing, but I don't know. The thing about Netflix with their online demand is their show quality. The picture quality is great, but I'm saying the choices that you have are not as good as if I think they said something about 10. There's only 10,000 videos online versus their, you know, obviously their physical library is more. It's like 90,000. Mm-hmm. What I think they're doing is they're trying to have the streaming. They're pushing the streaming only till 2010, and I think the reason is because they're going to have more, more movies in their live. In fact, maybe all of them.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why they're pushing it to 2000, because they could obviously do a streaming plan right now if they wanted to.
Yeah.
But I don't think it would be.
You think they got something up their sleeve that they're going to try? You know, they kind of made this small announcement now, and the big one's going to happen when this rolls out?
Yeah, well, I'm thinking that if they did the plan right now, people would be disappointed because of the selections.
Yeah.
There's only 10,000, and to be honest, a lot of them are like independent films or B-rated.
Yeah.
There's not, you don't get the latest movie, that's for
no,
sure.
No, yeah, you can't, you know, you couldn't see The Dark Knight the first week it came out on Netflix streaming.
Now, there are some, I mean, so like Heroes, there are some.
Yeah, they do that come new right TV out. Shows, which, I mean, you could almost make a really small plan off that by itself.
Yeah, I mean, that's a perfect example. I mean, that's like a Hulu competitor right there. Yeah. You can watch the latest TV show of pretty much any, you know, whatever they got.
Yeah.
If they made a DVD already, It's streaming, so.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I really like it. I use it on my Xbox 360, and I use it on Boxy. The quality is really good. Some TV content, even if it's broadcast in HD, if you have good enough internet, you can watch it streaming in HD.
Really?
On even like the Xbox 360 client, which is really cool because then, I mean, you know, like my wife can miss Heroes and then watch on the 360 in full HD quality. I think it's mostly NBC shows that are on there, like 30 Rock is in full HD, you know, Heroes, a couple others.
Yeah, I know I like the streaming streaming plan, and I would definitely probably switch to the streaming plan only if they had a better selection. I think that's what they're gearing up for in 2010.
Yeah, I mean, I have we have a 4-disc Netflix plan right now, and I don't utilize it at all. My wife utilizes it pretty a lot more than I do because she gets a lot of stuff, but I just don't watch discs. I mean, usually I'm working at my computer, so like if I can use it on Boxy on my iMac while I'm working on my other computer and stuff, that's perfect. I can kind of watch TVs or movies, you know, as background noise while I'm working. But I don't really sit in front of the TV and pop in a DVD very often anymore.
Right. And since I've been streaming, I've been sending my I have a 3-disc plan, mm-hmm. and I've been sending those discs in like once every week at the most.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah.
I used to do it like every other day or every couple days, you know?
Yep.
And what I'm thinking that a lot of people are doing is they're going to cut back their plan since Netflix makes it so easy to cut your plan. You just click a button and it's done.
Yeah.
With the streaming, I think I think I might switch down to about one CD and just get one good movie and then watch streaming for the rest of it until but if they get a big enough library for their streaming, I will definitely switch to the streaming only plan.
Yeah. I mean, even if they could get new DVD releases, let's say, you know, 2 weeks after they were released, I would be happy with that. I would buy just a streaming only plan for that. I don't know. I heard somewhere, and I don't have the source, and so I can't really post it, but I heard that Netflix's plan is to get out of the mail to DVD business altogether in the next 10, 15 years.
As soon as they can.
Long-term plan, yeah, is to get out of the mail. Because, I mean, there's a lot of infrastructure for that, whereas IT infrastructure involved for just streaming is a lot more consolidated. Right now, I mean, you and I saw they opened a distribution center in a town near us in Butte here in Montana. And finally, we could get DVDs at a reasonable time. I mean, people in California have been talking about putting Netflix in the mail and getting it the next day for years, and we had nothing like that. It was
at least 2 days.
Well, it was more than before the distribution center. It was, I mean, 5 days, you know. And so they have all this physical mailing infrastructure, and I think if they can get rid of that, they can really cut their costs if they went to only streaming. You know, I think that the sort of you know, cost to benefit ratio is a lot favorable for just going to streaming media.
Yeah, and I think that's the future. That's why the cable companies are trying to, I mean, that's why they got in the internet business and everything, is people are going to be watching TV, watching movies over the internet. There's not going to be a separate infrastructure for TV, I don't think, in the future. It's all going to be on the internet. Everything.
No, why not?
Phone, internet.
Yeah.
Voice, data, you know, everything.
I mean, it's a generic network, whereas it, instead of having all these very particular networks, I mean, we're lucky. Things like cable, internet right now can kind of like sidle along in the lower, you know, the lower ranges and still make it. But, I mean, why would you have all these proprietary networks that can only do one thing, you know, only do phone, maybe DSL, only do cable TV, maybe cable internet, when you could just have internet everywhere and have all those services piped through it?
Exactly.
But the crux to this is net neutrality, right? Like we were talking, I don't want Bresnan to lower the quality and bandwidth that I can get to Netflix streaming because they're in the same business.
Right. I mean, what's the point? I mean, if you're going to everybody wants everything on the same data network, but if you're going to prioritize voice over whatever, go back to the separate infrastructure.
Yeah. I think this is a clear case of anybody that uses the internet knows that net neutrality needs to be there. But, you know, lobbyists and bureaucrats are hearing the other side, only hearing really the other side of the story clearly. And it, you know, I really hope that net neutrality sticks through for this reason, because I think it's I like to have everything through the internet. I just want one pipe coming to my house, man. I just want one cable and everything can come through that. And I can have my choice of all the different providers, no matter where they are, you know, not just Ma Bell here and, you know, wherever I am, or Quest here, you know, I want just the pipe, and I want to be able to pick my services wherever they are in the world.
And I always thought if the net neutrality thing went sour, you know, I think people would backlash and develop something to get around it, or maybe even another, you know, network. Yeah.
Well, I mean, Google pretty much flat out said if net neutrality doesn't go through, then, you know, they're like, well, then we'll create our own internet, because that is ridiculous.
Internet 3 or
because
two
they
or
were right in the crosshairs. Everybody was like, well, you know, everyone goes to Google. Google is costing us all this bandwidth. And what these companies don't realize is without Google, I wouldn't be using the internet. It's Google is not forcing itself on me. I'm the consumer saying, I want to go to Google because it's useful. And these companies are spinning it like Google is, you know, gobbling up all our bandwidth. And this, you know, this evil YouTube thing is taking all our bandwidth. But it's because your customers are going there. If YouTube and Google didn't exist, I would just tell, you know, Bresnik Communications to cut off my, you know, my internet line right now. What's the point?
Yeah, I remember the local internet guy said, oh, he was complaining. He said, oh, the bandwidth's getting eaten up by these people going to YouTube and stuff. And I'm like, hey, get used to it. It's going to get worse.
Yeah, that means that as a company, you're not doing good. You need to pump up your bandwidth so that they can get what they want.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So.
Well, cool. Well, that's a great, I think that was a great little article. I hope to see Netflix go to a streaming-only plan sometime soon because I might, you know, actually just pay for that if it's a little bit cheaper than a DVD distribution plan.
And if anybody's wondering about Netflix, if you're into movies at all, check them out. I mean, if you haven't already,
yeah.
Tried
if you don't
them
know about Netflix, man, you really need.
I don't know. They literally have every single DVD I've ever looked for, even the most obscure things.
Yeah, like
got
the
it.
Joke
and
is,
if it was ever on a DVD, they got it.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, if it's super obscure, they might need to ship it from like New York or something. It might not be from your hometown.
Yeah,
but it's gonna be coming in the mail.
Yeah, exactly.
So
yeah, but I mean, I think if you haven't heard Netflix, you're probably not listening to this podcast because Netflix has become pretty, you know, a ubiquitous service with using the internet. So, all right. So, Mark, I have some web apps for us today. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Okay. So the first one we have, actually, you know, this one you told me about, so I'm going to let you talk about it. It's called Command Line Foo. So what is this, Mark?
All right, this one was sent in to me by Eric Wendelin, and this is just awesome. It's like the dig of one-line commander, yeah. One-liners commands. So I don't know, just look through here. I mean, it's just crazy stuff. It's awesome.
So the one thing I noticed immediately that I think is hilarious is its search says grep the archive.
Oh, that's awesome.
How cool is that?
That's cool. For people who don't know about grep, it's like a Unix command line for searching through text.
Regular expressions.
And it says grep the archive, which is like search.
Yeah. That's cool. So that's really cool. One cool feature I noticed is the random button. I like this. You and I,
nice.
This is perfect for you and I because we find one little goofy command line thing that we found out, like sudo bang bang.
Yeah, I found that from this site, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well,
it's one of those things that, like, I don't know how I missed it, but that command could save so much time, and it's simple, and I don't know.
Yep. Okay, so the random one I just got was a command to SSH tunnel with auto reconnectability. That's great.
Yeah.
I mean, you and I find little commands like this. You find this if you work with Vim, right? No one uses Vim the same way. Because, you know, there's the basic things you use the home row to move around, but all the time you're like, man, what would I do without, you know, cap Y or something?
And I'm like, Vim? What is cap Y?
Yeah. So this is great things just to find those little things that are so useful to you that you'll never forget. And then someday, you know, you'll get so used to using it and think that everyone does it. You'll talk to someone and they'll be like, what is sudo bang bang? What does that do? And you'll be like, you don't know about sudo bang bang. It's the best thing since sliced bread.
Yeah. And before you tell them, you say, well, let me put you in this scenario. You just typed a command and you forgot to put sudo. What do you do?
Yeah.
Some people are like, well, I hit up arrow, control A, and then type it in or whatever.
I don't even hit control A.
Really?
So you save me a lot of time.
Arrow
yeah.
it over or something.
Yep.
So you figure out how they do it and then be like, well, sudo bang bang.
Yep.
That's what it does for anybody listening. It just puts append sudo into the previous command.
So this is a cool site. I mean, I don't know how useful it is as a tool, but it's definitely a good time waster.
Here's one that I've never just this is awesome. I just saw is pkill-n Firefox, which kills only the most recent created process,
oh,
not the other
wow.
ones.
-n.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pkill.
And so, the other functionality that we kind of touched on and didn't talk about, though, is you can vote them up or down.
Yeah, so it's like the dig, they even say on the right here, dig-esque style of voting. So, yeah. I mean, it's an up-down thing. And honestly, they don't stay, it's not like it goes to the top and then it stays on the top. It's like dig to where these are new all the time.
Yeah,
these
it kind of cycles commands. Through with the new ones.
When I first went to the site, sudo bang bang was the number one on the top.
Oh, well, obvious that, I mean, it's obvious that would be number one because that's so useful.
You can leave comments on it if you don't quite understand it or you say all that. What are you doing with that command? There's a way better way to do it, you know, just like sudo bang bang versus.
The funny thing is if you go to an individual command, like if you do random, you know, on the bottom, you can Reddit or dig.
No way.
Each individual one.
I think that might be a little overkill.
You should have dug. You should have dug the pseudo bang bang. I bet a lot of dig people would be interested in that.
For sure. I mean, that's the other thing. It has OpenID, which I am a fan of. Kind of. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not. I would say most sites don't support it yet. So that's my only reason for not.
Pseudo bang bang is actually still number one on the popular tab. If you click popular, yeah, it's got 159 ups. Yeah, if you go at the top left, there's recent and popular. And recent, I'm assuming, is the kind of normalized one where it's popular ones that are fairly recent. But popular, I think, is all time.
Or maybe all time of the week or something.
Carrot bar runs. Yeah, that's a good one. Replace it. Oh, this is so useful.
Like if you have a huge long command, but you like apt-get install something, and you forgot to put an A in install or something, you can just replace it real quick.
Did you see this one? FFmpeg-F XL blah. It captures a video of the Linux desktop.
Yeah, I did see that. But got to get audio in there.
Well, but you can dub over that.
True.
Very cool. Okay.
But
so
yeah,
this
that's
is awesome.
If you're into programming, Unix stuff, Linux, whatever, this is awesome. And they have Mac commands too.
Ooh.
I think they even have a category for it.
Oh, that's handy. Because they are different sometimes.
Well, they have if you look on the tag on the right, it says OS X, and you click on that, and you'll see all the different OS X commands.
Oh,
well,
wow.
All the ones that are tagged for OS X.
Oh, okay. So I mean, if it works in Linux and OS X, you could tag it for both. Or Bash, let's say Bash and OS. Oh, that's really cool. Because there are some commands that bleed over.
Here, like, for instance, here's one for the Mac. Create an ISO image from a folder and burn it to CD.
Oh.
Right on the Mac.
Yeah. That's
handy.
Or
show how much space you got on a certain deal. Or convert a PDF to a JPEG. That's interesting.
Sudo-L. That will list your sudo rights.
Really?
So that you don't get the nasty message when you super user do without permissions. And it always creates this nasty message like, this incident will be reported. And you're like, oh no, I'm going to get in trouble.
All right. Well,
cool. Very cool.
If you're into that, check it out. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it looks like, I mean, it doesn't look like a huge community, so if you really want to get in there and kind of become part of the community and really try and find cool stuff, I think you could really dig into that and have fun. So
I know I learned something when I went there, so pseudo bang bang was one of them.
All right, so next we're going to talk about this really cool thing. I got it from Ryan Heibuck, which is a guy I work with. Really cool thing called Etherpad. So we do our show notes in Google Docs because we like the collaborative essence of it. We can both edit it. You can share it with me, and then I can add stuff throughout the week before we prepare the show and get that sort of stuff done. Etherpad is basically Google Docs on speed. Google Docs, you know, it keeps sort of this really tight revision. Like if you go in and edit a document for an hour, that's, you know, a group of revisions. Whereas if I go in and edit for a while, that's a group of revisions. This it has no formatting whatsoever. I mean, you can't change the font, you can't change the orientation, but it is real time collaborative editing.
I don't know if anybody's ever played around with, but have you ever VNC'd together on a machine and then you go open Notepad and you just start typing away?
Yeah.
This is similar to something like that.
Yeah. So right now what we decided that we're going to do with our show notes is when we actually go to record, we want that real time sort of active editing where that Google Docs doesn't give you. I mean, pretty close, but this is hyper active real time editing.
It's like per character.
Yeah. So right now I can see our show notes that we've copied and pasted into here from Google Docs. And I can see that my color is this sort of purple and Mark's is this green. And I can see everything that Mark has added. I can see everything that I've added because it's color coded and it's real time. And it's got also another cool thing that Google Docs has. It has a chat on the side. So right now I can see that I'm kind of chatting with Mark about the document without editing. I mean, we could just chat in the document, but that would kind of get hairy. But so this is kind of nice that it's this little chat off to the side.
And it's color coded as well.
Yeah. So, and you can see the saved revisions, or actually, I mean, it doesn't revision automatically, but let's say I wanted to take a snapshot of our show notes right now as a revision. I can hit save now, and it will actually snap that as a revision right now.
You know, I wonder if this would be a good candidate for like kind of like a real-time pastebin learning kind of thing.
Kind of a pair programming thing. You could do that, like we were talking about.
Last episode.
Yeah, we talked about pair programming in our last episode, and this is really, it's really fast enough to do that. Now, unfortunately, you'd have to like copy or paste it into another file to save it.
There wouldn't be a syntax highlighting.
Yeah. But that's a great example. Let's say you just pasted some code in there and we're like, hey, can you just clean this up for me? And I want to see your process or something like that. You could see exactly what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the other really good thing about this is there is no sign up. You don't have to sign up. You just go to etherpad.com. You click start a new pad and it just gives you a sort of a random URL.
Just like snipped, .net or
Doodle. You know, there's no sign up anything. It just gives you a random URL that I can then just, you know, paste to IAM client to you, and you can just start editing right away. And so you go up in the top and you kind of change your name there and your color. But I mean, by default, all it takes is I paste this URL to you and you and, you know, however many other people can come in and just start editing right away.
So it's not a replacement for like Google Docs or something like that. It's something different. So
yeah.
Different. It's got a different purpose, which, you know, it's more real time. It's actually really great for podcasting because you can actually chat on the thing and also do real time editing.
Yeah. I mean, let's say I think of something that we should talk about in one of our later segments while you're talking, I can go add it to the notes right away and you can see it just right away. There's none of this. Sometimes Google has kind of this synchronization lag that you never know whether or not, you know, Google is kind of made for collaborative editing asynchronously, where you Mark edits it and then Jade edits it, but it takes care of all the merging and stuff for you. This is real time as you're, you know, seat of your pants type editing.
All right.
I really like, we've kind of hit a couple of these and it seems that, a lot of people have a hard time with web applications because they don't want to sign up for it. They don't want to share their information. I mean, we talked about this with you. You don't do it a lot because you don't like to kind of pick a web app and you'd like to stick with things. So if a company goes under, you don't really like with it. But a lot of these new ones are kind of realizing that having a person log in is a barrier to entry. And if you can still monetize off them not logging in by displaying ads, you know, or something, then it's still okay. You don't have to get that other information. I mean, you might sacrifice the ability to send out a mass email to them, but a lot of people get tired of that anyways.
I just want to make a correction. I'm reading on their front page. It says syntax highlighting for editing code actually is on here.
No.
Yep.
Wow.
And they say also every keystroke is backed up, so you could do a history or an undo forever.
Wow.
Since you first started that pad.
Since the beginning of time.
No, like literally every keystroke.
Very cool.
So like you can go back. They also say it's useful for team programming. So they even mentioned pair programming.
We are on the ball on that one, I tell you. So if
they do have they say pricing. Maybe there's something else you can do as well.
Maybe is there a pro version? I didn't really look at that because I thought this was good enough for me.
Yeah, it's definitely. Let's see. Private. Okay, so they've got a private network edition. Maybe you can install it on your. Yeah, it looks like you can install it on your own network. So if you're gonna do it in house,
oh wow,
on your own network, you can buy it.
Wow, that's really cool.
And you can get a hosted edition. That's pretty much what it is. But even the free version's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even really look for a pay version because I thought this one was so really cool. It was so cool how fast it is and how easy it is to get going with it.
I could see this being useful for like a conference call, like a Microsoft meeting, whiteboard kind of style stuff.
Yeah, exactly. I thought about this for meeting notes where, I mean, sometimes when I call and run a meeting, people expect me to take the meeting notes and I can't because I'm running the meeting. I'm trying to make sure everything's, you know, on the agenda and happens in order. So I can't take the notes. But I don't want to assign it to one other person because then they're going to be plastered at their computer the whole time trying to take notes and not really participating in the meeting. This is a great way to sort of aggregate note-taking for a meeting to a bunch of different people. It's almost the epitome of the wiki style, but real time.
And the best part about it is they don't have to be signed up. So this could be somebody that's maybe non-tech that don't have a Google Doc, you know, thing.
Yeah.
You don't want to go get their email and share it. You just say, hey, go to this URL real quick and we'll go.
Just pop it up, start typing, and then you see that green color? That's me. You see that red color? That's Bill. Let's go.
That's as simple as it get.
Yeah.
Don't get the formatting in the way or anything. Just let's just start
typing. Yeah. A lot of people, I've noticed, so this is a kind of off topic, kind of not. I've noticed a big barrier to entry with Google Docs for people is that it doesn't have like all the formatting that Microsoft Word does. And that really bugs me because that's not the strength of it. And sometimes I've noticed that when you try and format a Google Doc like you would a Word document, it is just as bad with Word as like goofing it up through the whole document and stuff. So, I mean, people need to get out of that anyways. And this is sort of the epitome of it. You're saying it's all writing. It's not formatting. It's not pretty bullets. It's not anything. It's just write stuff down.
Yeah. I can't stand word processors sometimes.
Oh.
Just today I was trying 11.25, a decimal point, and I was going to type something about it and then hit enter, and it started doing bulleted lists starting at 11.25. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Thank you. Microsoft Word.
Where does a convenience come in where I could just click, I want a bulleted list versus just do it for me? But there's no option. It was just really annoying.
So this alleviates that because it's just pure text. It's in, I mean, I think it's a monospace font. It looks as plain as Notepad, but really feature packed in the back end. So I think everyone should check it out. At least, I mean, it requires no sign up or anything. At least go take a look at it and play around with it with a buddy for 5 minutes. And if you're not sold, then leave, because you don't have to worry about them selling your information or anything.
Yeah, you don't have to sign up and give them an email or nothing.
Yeah. So cool.
All right, this next one's actually really similar to this one. This is one I found. It's an online clipboard is what they basically advertise it as. So let's try it now. So what it is clip.net with, so CL1P.net.
The number one,
the digit. Okay. So it's like short URL or tiny URL. You can specify the end and we're going to just do face off show.
Okay.
And show my clipboard. So we start with that.
Okay.
And as soon as we type that in. And you should be able to see my clipboard, I believe. Yeah, because there's no... So you should be able to see it now.
Okay. So after we do that, what do we do with it?
Okay, so from here, it's an online clipboard. We can actually paste any text in here. So I'm going to grab some URL real quick from our... Okay, so I can copy and paste some text in here. So this is kind of like Pastebin or something. You just want to throw some text in here. Maybe you're going to use it to switch computers. Maybe you're going to throw in a bunch of text or some files and then swap to another computer real quick. You don't have your USB flash disk on you. You don't have a network share available.
The typical thing that people do is they email themselves.
Yeah.
I think this will replace that a lot.
Okay. Now the thing is the clip will expire in 7 days. That's a good thing and it's a bad thing. It's not long-term storage thing, but it's a good thing.
I see the things, you know, for the record. I was on your clipboard and they popped up.
So. They just did. Yep. Okay, cool. It's going to expire in 7 days. That's a great thing because you're not going to have to be worried about let's say you put an image on there real quick to swap a computer. You don't really have to worry about it staying on there forever or anything like that.
Yeah. Or I was just thinking that kind of sucks that the clip for the slash face off show is now taken forever because I could never do that again. But if it expires in 7 days, it's no big deal, right?
Right.
Okay.
But it's not limited just by text. As you can see on the side, we've got files. I can upload up to 30 megabytes. So I could put five Word documents on here, go to another computer in the computer lab or, my house or whatever, pull it up. Be start working again.
Okay, we just actually just developed sort of a quick file Dropbox at work.
Uh-huh.
That this totally would have solved.
Yeah, I mean it's pretty cool.
Well, I'm lucky it only took us like a day to develop, with good coders. But
where I would see this just being absolutely awesome is in a computer lab situation, like at a university.
Oh yeah, working with other students.
I would recommend this. Before they were using floppy disk, then we started recommending using a flash disk, and that's better. But then they leave them in the stupid computer lab. Yep. They forget them. They don't bring them with them. They start emailing themselves, which is not bad. I mean, the email's great because it's archived forever and everything, but this is pretty quick.
Yeah, I mean, some things don't have to be archived forever. I mean, I'm lucky Google gives me 7 megs or whatever it is now, but I don't
need
that.
7 gigs, you mean, but...
Or 7 gigs. 7 megs. I can, one Word document. I mean, but why waste that if you don't have to? This is perfect for that. I think this is a great little thing.
And as long as you know the URL, you can get to it too. So I can copy something real quick and share it. So I can, if I was teaching a class or something, I could say, all right, I'm going to upload these files real quick for everybody to go view. just go to this URL real quick. You've got the notes. You could have the class notes with the files that you needed for that semester, that particular class or something, and then it's over.
Think if you were a professor or a teacher, you could, you know, before class, put all the stuff you need for class on this clip and then be like, okay, go to clip.net/ you know, today's history lecture. And there's all the notes you have, all the files you would need, instead of having, you know, instead of having sort of this big overpowering learning management system like a lot of universities have. You can just, you know, use these tools that are out there and free already.
It has an option to print. So, you know, you could copy and paste some text that you wanted to print, and then go to another computer that's hooked up to a printer and then hit print.
Mm-hmm.
The place where I see it being used the most is like a university computer lab type setting.
Yeah. Well,
but you could use it. You could obviously use it, you know, yourself at home, but
there's a lot to be said about being able to pick the little URL at the end, right? I mean, what we just saw with Etherpad is that you can't, and that's good and bad in that it's obfuscated if it's random so that people just can't go to it. But at the same time, like, this is really handy because you can just say, go to this. I can remember it. I'm not going to forget it. I mean, sometimes when you have these obfuscated URLs, you lose it forever and it expires in 7 days, but you could be like, oh man, that thing's sitting out there right now. Someone else could find it, you know, but this, you're like, okay, I know my URL, which is really handy because like tiny URL lets you do that. It can give you a random hashed one if you want, but you could, or if you want, you can also set your own, which is really nice.
Yeah.
I like it. Okay. So our next one, a little backstory for our listeners. It was probably 4 months ago, I think. Mark and I and one of our other friends were hanging out. And me and the other friend are, you know, pretty big coffee drinkers. Not fancy coffee drinkers, but I drink a lot of coffee throughout the day. Just regular black drip coffee. And out of the blue, for some reason, we were at lunch at a place and we were drinking coffee. That's what it was. Mark said, you know what? I'm going to start drinking coffee.
Just for our listeners, I am not a morning person. And I was a Red Bull guy, and I don't know, with Red Bull is absolutely just crazy expensive.
Yeah.
And so I was looking for an alternative. And I've always hated the taste of coffee. I've always hated even the smell of coffee, because I knew just because of the smell, you just knew the taste. You're just like, ah.
It does kind of taste like dirt in general.
I like it now. I'm a coffee drinker.
Yeah, you're a hardcore coffee drinker. Before we start the show, every time Mark has to brew up a pot of coffee so that we can drink. So because you are new to the coffee realm, Mark, I want to send you to coffeenatic.com. This is a site where you can review and rate various brews of coffee.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm ready.
You're not a connoisseur.
I don't know if I'm a connoisseur of coffee yet. But
in the future, you know, you can sign up and rate the blends you want. You can.
How do they know what a blend is? Like, if I go to my local mocha, you know,
mocha coffee place.
Yeah. Cup of Joe.
Well, this is more for ground beans, I think.
Oh, okay.
So like, if you go to a store, even a store like Safeway. They have, you know, their brand name and then sort of, you know, this blend, like their French roast blend and things like that.
Can you order from these guys?
I don't think so. I'm sure.
So this is stuff you can get in a Safeway or like a.
I'm sure some is and I'm sure some isn't. There's a lot of specialty coffee out there, too, and I'm sure they cover this up there. But what you can do is, you know, you can put the price level in, you can put your rating, you can put the kind of coffee it is, like if it's ground coffee or prepared coffee. Like, I'm sure you should actually look for it right now. It's like they have Dunkin' Donuts coffee in there. I'm sure they do. And then you can kind of say what region it's from, what kind it is, like Arabica, like what bean it is. And then you can tag it with different things, too, or comment on it, each blend. So if you want, you can, you know, and I think this is sort of, for me, one site that I've kind of dreamed up and have been working on is called Bozeman Review. And this has a lot of elements of what I want in Bozeman Review, but not just coffee. I wanted to review restaurants locally. Uh-huh. But this has a lot of the elements I like. Like, their logo is this sort of wrinkled napkin with the coffee ring around it and kind of the logo drawn in it. I mean, it's stylistically, I love the sort of dark brown color of it and everything. I think it's a great site.
Yeah, they have a nice site. It actually reminds me of Wine Library or Corked.
Yeah, Corked was the wine. It's pretty much a coffee equivalent to Corked. So sort of social coffee sharing. So, you know, if you ever do reach that level, Mark, I want you to remember this site and remember that I took you here so that, you know, you can give back to the community and tell everybody about all this wonderful coffee you've been drinking that, you know, was passed through a cat and then roasted and ground.
Okay, and one of the reasons we wanted to let you guys know about this is because it's if you're designing your own web apps or something, this is a great one to model the certain types of social. I mean, this is a good Web 2.0 example, like, or style, yeah. or something, a model.
Yeah, I mean, it has the sort of the really good clean look that is really friendly. It fits its clientele really well.
It's got a community aspect to it.
Yeah, social. And you know, you can browse by. It's got tagging in it, which I think tagging is really good. You know, it's really, you can search for recipes. You can look at all the coffee and stuff. I think it's a good example of a site for especially for me, for the thing that I want to kind of design in the future. This has a lot of, if not every element that I was kind of hoping for. So really cool. Remember, Mark, if you keep drinking coffee, that you need to go here and find the good stuff, because maybe I the coffee in my house might not be the best in the world.
I don't know. I am a straight coffee guy. I tried this. In fact, the first time I had coffee, I put tons of sugar and stuff because I thought I was going to hate the taste. And I eventually figured out that I don't like the sweeteners and things, but neither here nor there. What do we got next?
All right. So the next thing we have to talk about is called Link Blip. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff when you're kind of running your own blog system and everything. You can, you know, keep track of your clicks and stuff with Google Analytics, or even WordPress has its own stat system. What this lets you do is it lets you put in a URL, and then it gives you back a special URL that when you send it to people, it tracks if they clicked it. Not only if they clicked it, but like what city and state they're in when they click it and when they click it.
Wow. So you email them a link and it's like Google Analytics in the email.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know.
So does it have an. So is the link has a certain hash on it, and that's how they know, or is it an image that goes in their email, or?
No, it's almost like a tiny URL. You put in the URL that you want to send them to, and it gives you back sort of, a random URL that goes to like Link Blip, and they click on that. And so all they know is when they click on the link, it takes them to where you wanted them to go.
But there's a redirect there, and they're counting that redirect.
Yeah, it counts that redirect, and it looks at where they're from. So a lot of, sometimes in email people like to send, I can't even remember what they're called, the thing that is like, hey, have you read this email? And so like when in Outlook, if you get the email, it's like, this person wants to know if you've read this email. Should I send it to you? And no one uses it anymore because everyone turns it off.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to send a notification back to someone that I read their email, nor do I want to receive notifications that someone has read me an email. But let's say, you know, I'm getting like some heated conversations with, a client or something. They think that I didn't do the job that they should. So I say, hey, I'm going to send you the link for the new, you know, the new prototype of the site. And I want you to, you know, let me know what you think. I'm going to put that link into a Link Blip and then email them that link. So when they click on it, I'll know. Like, I know they saw it. Or I can say, like, well, I mean, you looked at it at 8 in the morning before you had your cup of coffee, Mark. Of course you're not going to like my demo. You don't like anything at 8 in the morning before you've had your coffee. So
And if they pass that link to others, you're going to know the other people that have already clicked on it, too.
Or I can say, there's a great example. It's like, okay, well, this is just a demo, so I want to show you. And it's like, well, how come you sent the link to 12 other people in your office and they're looking at it? Not supposed to do that. So it's just another one of those really quick little tools that you can kind of use to keep track of things. But here's the other thing I really wanted to talk about this for, because do you see what's in the upper right-hand corner?
I do, and I saw. Actually, I didn't see that at first. I saw that one at the bottom. It's for sale.
Yeah. So,
I just looked at his profile a little bit, and he's made other apps that have already been acquired. So this guy, he's got great ideas. Obviously,
yeah,
they're already being acquired.
Cool and simple. But I just think it's funny. I mean, it almost looks like one of those door things you see, or the things out in people's yards when they're trying to sell the house, where they're like, check out my inside and you know, great price, you know. It's like right on the front page, like Link Blip, cool. Oh, for sale. okay.
That sucks.
Yeah. But if the guy's making money doing this, maybe that's a great idea that we need to think about.
I haven't seen any other service like this. Even if it goes for sale or whatever, it would be simple, super easy to make something like this if you had to.
Yeah.
But this, the idea alone is worth it. I mean, this is great. Obviously, go to LinkBlip if it's still around and it's still working. Go there and try it out and use it.
Yeah. I mean, I have an idea. It's probably been for sale for a little while. Yeah. The way the economy is going, I don't think it's, you know, little web startups aren't as big a hot case.
It might be hard to monetize because what are they going to do? Freeze them there for a minute, show an ad, yeah. Then forward
and
then them
no
on.
No one's going to use that service.
No, so I don't know. It's a great idea. I don't know if you can monetize it.
I could see it being acquired by a bigger software suite that wants to integrate that functionality in without having to write new code or something like that. But neither here nor there. Pretty cool. It's, you know, keep track of the links you're sending out if you don't have, you know, I mean, we do it with our analytics on our blog, but let's say if I put a post in a forum or in an email or a comment on someone else's blog, I mean, this is a great way to say, hey, I wonder if anybody's actually coming, you know, when I go out and send links to, you know, if I comment in someone else's blog and I put a link in, this is a great way to see if people are actually clicking those links and where they're from. All right, Mark. So those are the web apps for the week. I think they're pretty cool. I hope you like them. So the first thing I want to talk about is an article I stumbled across called 21 Reasons Why Readers Don't Like Your Blog.
All right. So what are the reasons? What do we
got? Okay. So one, don't make leaving comments a difficult task. Number two, don't ban search engines from your blog.
That's bad. Oh. Actually, well, there's some good reasons for that, okay, actually.
Okay.
Just
wait.
That's all.
Three, don't resize users' browser windows or have pop-ups on your blog.
I hate that.
Number four, don't have 1-hour flash intro. Don't hide your real blog content.
Terrible.
Five, don't use blinking text or too many colors or anything irritating.
Hold on one second. Okay, so the blinking things and the slowing the browser down. I don't have much of a problem in Windows, but Linux, it's got a problem because the graphics drivers aren't quite there sometimes. Is if you have too much JavaScript on the page, it really scrolls really super slow, and it's really annoying. So I just add that in there. It's kind of irritating.
Thank you.
Okay.
Number six, don't write anonymously on your blog. And I figure we'll just go through all these, and I'll just hit it really quick on you. Okay. Seven, don't leave your comments unanswered. Number eight, don't design your blog for only one browser. Number nine, don't try to cheat the visitor and have a full page of keywords. Number 10, don't leave your blog posts undated. Don't make it hard for users to navigate your blog. Don't have too many pictures. That will increase your loading time. Don't force your readers to open a dictionary. Don't use very famous WordPress blogger theme.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, don't use center-aligned text. Maybe use it for headers. Don't design your website as a screenshot. Don't forget to design your blog footer. Don't use similar font color and text background or selected text and background. Don't forget to present email RSS subscriptions up front. Don't forget the power that social media sites have. And number 21 is don't forget to have fav icons and logos to identify your blog.
Wow.
So which ones of the, I mean, I think they're all pretty good points. Some of them seem silly. Like why would you purposefully ban search engines from your entire blog?
Well, if you have duplicate content, you don't want them to go and index.
Assuming if you're smart enough to know that, then why would you ban them from your blog completely?
Well, it probably says be careful when you're writing robots.txt and things like that. You can accidentally ban them. Is that what it says here? Yep.
Kind of.
Block crawlers from robot.txt or use a non-index meta tag. I mean, you got to be careful with the kind of stuff. If you download some theme, for a WordPress theme or something, and they accidentally had that. Oops. They accidentally had that index tag, no index tag on there or something. You didn't know about it. All of a sudden, you're like, why am I?
Why is no one coming to my blog?
Yeah, it could be. I don't know.
Okay. I think number one is a good one to hit on because I've also seen articles about how to sort of increase the community of your blog, and you need to minimize the ability it takes, the amount of work it takes for someone to post a comment and participate. It also talks about trying to make sure that you don't get spam because spam is not good. But I mean, I kind of thought about this with some of my sites for a while there. I had that you had to register to post a comment because I was like, well, I want these people to register so that they're part of my community and then they post, right?
No way.
Absolutely not. Yeah, I mean, that was the stupidest idea ever because people, I mean, even my friends who I sent to this
even
blog.
Me? I was like.
Yeah, you're a great example. Like if you go in, you're not logged in. The second you go to type a thing and it says you have to be logged in, even though you already have an account, you're like, ah, that's not important enough to do it.
But leave the option to be logged in. I mean,
oh, of course, yeah.
Then they can just hit their thing, hit submit. I notice a lot of blogs either do that or they have your information filled in already from the cookie.
Yeah, that's nice.
This one's okay. What are your thoughts on this? Don't leave your comments unanswered. Do you now? You don't obviously don't want to answer every single comment.
Yeah,
it makes you look. It might make, you know
what
I'm saying?
It looks desperate, and it's just kind of close. I mean, if you have five comments that say, great job, you don't want to, after each one, say, thanks. Great job. Thanks. Good article. True. Thanks. You know, I mean, what I do is...
But do you even answer every question, though?
Well, if people ask questions, I feel like I need to answer them.
Okay.
And then sort of after the blog post is cooled down, like after a day or two, you know, of being active, that's when you'd say, hey, guys, thanks for all the positive comments.
True. I know, like on my UPS quote... I will get, or UPS quote, the UPS article on my blog that's really popular. I will get a guy that comments and says, I can't get this working. And then he'll comment like 20 minutes later saying, I got it working, but I can't get this working.
Yeah.
And then, but see, you wouldn't want to jump in there right away and just answer him because sometimes they'll figure out their own problems.
Yeah, you'll spend too much time. You'll spend all your time commenting, not enough time creating content. Yeah, I agree.
And a lot of times they'll answer their own questions. So
this is, I mean, the don't write anonymously on your blog. You kind of gave me a funky face with that.
Oh, yeah. So, I was like, what does that mean?
Even if I go to marksanborn.net, you might have guest bloggers. So make sure you put who is posting the post.
Even if it's you every single time.
Yep, even if it's you every single time. Try and, I mean, make it obscure. Don't be like, here's the title to my blog, by Mark Sanborn. But give them the ability to know that that is actually you posting it. Because, I mean, a lot of personal blog sites that people had turned into giant things with a lot of writers, so people don't always know who's writing.
Don't design your blog for only one browser. That's an awesome tip. I mean, most developers know this. Is Netscape a browser still? I've got that,
you know,
checked there.
My rule is that if it doesn't work in Netscape 4, then I'm sorry, you need to get off the internet.
I thought there Netscape is, quit though. They don't do the browser stuff anymore.
I don't know, but all I know is that is ridiculous. I'm not even going to look at that anymore. I am to the point of really not even paying attention to IE6 just due to frustration. I mean, if you're doing anything commercial, you have to pay attention to IE6. But
this one,
still, ugh.
So, and then don't leave your posts undated. This one, I mean, this is obvious for your own good and theirs. They want to know if it's, I mean, if the user comes to your site and, you know, it's old information, but there's no date. They're gonna call you on it and say, "What's wrong with this?"
Yeah,
information.
Exactly.
But if it's dated, they realize that you wrote the article before.
Yeah,
you can save yourself headache that way.
Plus, you know, it saves them headache. I mean, the big thing
it's
is
just a good. It's
I mean,
a
we like to think about ourselves as working hard on this too. But the big thing is we have to help our users out. So I've done this before especially when searching for news stuff. You're like, oh, cool. You know. Or you feel really stupid because you're like, oh, that's cool, new. And then you look at the date and you're like, oh, that was 2003. I'm behind the times.
Yeah.
But always, yeah. I mean, you have to date everything. The whole point of a blog is that it's sort of, you know, the post on that day, things like that. I don't know why that's silly that someone would forget about that.
Don't use too many pictures. Increase load time. You know, that's
why slow.
Use
right
the
there.
Y slow. If you check out our last podcast, check out Y slow and then also the dig. Caching scalability article.
I found a one that we broke, though. You made a note of this when I was saying it. Don't use a very famous WordPress or blogger theme.
It's true. It is so true.
We're just lazy. We need to get a new theme up for faceoffshow.com. Yep. It'll happen. But guilty. I mean, we learned a lesson there today.
Even marksanborn.net, my personal blog that I have, it's about tech stuff. It's a theme that I took that was not very, you know, it wasn't very popular that I thought anyways. And I modified it quite heavily. I changed quite a bit about it, but you'd be surprised. I've seen so many sites that use it. It's not exactly like mine because I've modified it, but at the same time, it's like, oh man.
It makes you feel really dirty. I know I went to another blog. I guess for faceoffshow.com, we picked a pretty popular theme. We of course tried to modify it the best we could to kind of personalize it, but we didn't put too much effort into it because we're planning on just designing our own theme sometime soon. But anytime I see another site with that theme, I just go, oh, I feel so dirty.
Yeah.
I
well, know you feel bad, and then you also feel, you look at their site, and you look down on their site because it's a theme, you know?
Yeah, like I almost felt like they were stealing from me. I mean, how silly is that? I mean, we just put this website up, but I remember thinking like, oh, those guys stole my theme. You know, it was mine, even though it was one of the most popular WordPress themes out there.
Yeah, and I mean, there's no it's a time thing. I've already made themes for WordPress. We can do it. It's gonna take us a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
Get that up. We just wanted a website up real fast.
So this is a good thing that I haven't really paid much attention to, and I think it's really important. But don't forget to present email and RSS subscription up front. RSS we always focus on because we're pretty heavy geeks and we both like RSS a lot. But we need to do this because FeedBurner has this functionality built in, but a lot of people don't know what RSS is, and they want to subscribe via email.
Uh-huh.
I mean, if you don't know what RSS is, when someone says subscribe, you kind of think, I mean, I helped my dad set up, I set my dad up a blog called MontanaMushrooms.com, and he had no clue what RSS was. All he wanted to do was he wanted his users to get an email, to be able to sign up to get an email when there's a new post. And I said, well, Dad, just subscribe to RSS. That's what it is. And he was like, well, RSS, what is that? And I explained it to him, and then it made sense to him because my dad's a really smart guy. But his initial, point blank thought was that subscription meant email me when something new comes out.
Yeah, I read ProBlogger, another blog that talks about, monetizing blogs, making successful blogs. One of his suggestions, I mean, he says, you need to have an email subscription thing because there's people that use that. They don't like the RSS, or they don't know about it or whatever. He's got tons of people that do the email thing.
Yeah. And so make sure you have that up there so that you can be accessible to all ages. I mean, I'd like to.
I don't want to say the old people use the email versus the young, but. There's different types of users that prefer different things.
So. Well, and
there's benefits on the email. Like it's more formal. It's like you're gonna see it.
You and I have talked about this. I think there's almost two kinds of RSS reading. Right. There's almost an email type where you read each post and then you mark it as read. You've read it. You read all the content. Look at it. And then there's almost this other sort of RSS feature that's almost like a newspaper headline where you don't want to mark each one of them as read. Usually it's a lot of content and you just kind of want almost like a newspaper headline overview, similar to the iGoogle homepage. When you add something to that, it just puts like the top, the latest 10 ones on there. You don't mark each one of them as read. It's not as personal of a process. And this kind of does that. So blogs, I think, are a good thing. Like your blog or my blog, we don't post 20 times a day. I could almost get rid of those in my reader and put those into an email thing because I would be just as happy to get an email whenever you made a new post. It's the same thing to me. I look, I see that you have a new post. I mark it that I have read that notification of a new post and move on. And so if someone doesn't want to mess with RSS at all, you don't have to. You could just go in your inbox every morning. Oh, Mark Sanborn has a new post. JadeRobbins.com has a new post. Oh, hey, what do you know? So these are some good tips. I think they all have good points in the end. Maybe we need to get rid of our theme and get cranking on a new one so that we're not one of these noobs that they're trying to prevent from using things like that in here. So all right, that about wraps it up for this episode of Face Off Show. We'd like to remind you that you can subscribe via faceoffshow.com/feed. Or if you have suggestions or comments, you can email us at studio@faceoffshow.com. You can reply to us at Twitter via twitter.com/faceoffshow, or just comment on the episode at faceoffshow.com. Comments, suggestions, and tips are always welcome. And we hope to see you here again on our next episode of Face Off.